Hey guys, Pace Morby here. Welcome. You guys have seen me make a lot of seller calls, right? We've posted a lot of calls where I call sellers and I negotiate subject to seller finance, novation agreements, all of those things. But in this, I'm actually going to negotiate with another investor. This investor's name is Brittany. I got permission, obviously, to record this and give it to you guys so you guys can see exactly how I will negotiate with another investor, somebody who purchased a property earlier this year. They went and obtained a loan on it, and now they're saying, it might not be the greatest house for us. I think we're going to sell it retail. A great sign of an amazing negotiator is that you can't tell the difference between somebody negotiating and somebody saying something authentically, giving advice.
You're listening to the Sub 2 Breakhouse with Pace Morby on the Wholesale Hotline podcast.
California is awesome. I mean, if you're not trying to build a rental portfolio out there, it's you know, the politics are horrible.
Yeah.
So what's going on with the other property?
So this other property we own.
Looks like it doesn't really have any equity.
Yeah, we literally just bought it in March. So I've always wanted, you know, John and I both, one of the caveats, I think we've tried to leave California like 5 times, like every year. But every time we tried to leave, he booked something else big. And it's like, okay, we're staying. So with the last caveat, I was like, okay, we're moving. No, we're staying. We're like, okay, as long as we can still invest. December came, this past December, made a commitment to like, all right, we're going to buy our first investment. The first one is the hardest. We're going to buy our first one. So purchased our first investment property in March. We closed in, I think, like 17 days. Just had all of our ducks lined up. It was a divorced couple that wanted to get rid of it. Agent brought it to me that we're really close with. And we just did like some just cosmetic lipstick rehab, you know, painted, put all new LED lighting in, painted the cabinets like all white. I mean, just you saw the pictures. We put it up for rent on a Wednesday night by 7 a.m. Thursday morning. Lease was signed and we had a tenant move in. I mean, he's been very great, you know, paying. We just see the check come in or he does the online payment. He sent me a text message earlier about mid-September that he lost his visa because his company has to shut down. Something happened with he and his business partner. So he has to be back in Mexico by December 1st. So he's paid rent through November 30th. He was like, keep my deposit, please. I hate to put you in this position. I mean, the cash flow that we have right now is like $500 a month, which is like, it's just five. It's a $500 a month. But, you know, we're like, well, someone else is paying our mortgage, the phantom income thing. That's great. That's fine. It's in our hometown, College Station, Texas A&M. We just beat Alabama. Whoop. But
that's a really big deal.
Yeah. It's a great house. It's just, I don't know, like John and I, like, do we want to be long distance landlords? We don't pay a property management company just because of the connections that we have there. I have a maintenance guy that, you know, anytime I need something fixed, he goes and fixes it. But it's like, we're kind of shifting we're in a different financial position now than we were earlier this year. So we're like, we could actually go into doing more Airbnbs in specific areas.
Right.
We're probably closer to home, you know, thing like Big Bear, or Lake Arrowhead or something like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Then doing some, you know, constantly having this thing in Texas.
Yeah. So is there an opportunity for me to buy that one?
Yeah. I mean, it's ours. It's like, that's what we're weighing out. And the thing with that is like, well, we've had it for less than a year. Like you said, we don't have much equity in it.
Yeah. If you sold it today, you would have to write a check to get rid of it basically. Right.
Probably.
If you sold it on the market.
Right. I have someone who said they'd give us, so we paid $210,000. I think we have like $201,000 remaining. Someone said that they would potentially buy it for $245,000, which would be great. Actually, an agent is going to go show that the person is in town this weekend. So one of the agents that brings us properties in College Station, he's going to go show it to the individual today. He's asking for 4.5% commission if it does, but that's not a guarantee. So this person has 3 properties that they're looking at this weekend. And I don't know, I'm not savvy enough in like all the calculations to know if they picked it up at 245, would we be at
You'd basically break even. You guys bought it for 210, right?
Right.
So what would you want to sell it to me for?
To not break even. And I understand like that.
I mean, no, I don't want you to break even. I want you to make money.
So, right. So if I were to sell it to you, I would want to sell it at 275.
275? So
that 275.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a buyer for you. I mean, 245, you'd break even in a cash transaction. At 275, that's well above market. right? So you're wanting to not just break even, you're wanting to make like 50, 60 grand cash.
I mean, I love this conversation. I just don't want us to break even. So even if we did, you know, 255, like I just,
well, I would never buy this house. I would never buy it cash, by the way.
Right. I know. So that's the reason why, you know, I brought it to you. I was like, well, if it's a creative deal, then that would make sense too.
Like, here's what I deal with on a weekly basis. I get people that both send us deals and then obviously our own direct to seller marketing. Our average deal that we buy subject to costs us about $15,000 in cash. Okay. So that is like cash to the seller plus our closing costs, plus our first months of our payments and stuff like that. So that would mean probably you would get $10,000 in your pocket. Plus I pay for the closing costs and whatever else. And then I would take the property over. That doesn't mean I wouldn't pay higher than $10,000. I'm just saying that as my down payment to you, I would limit my down payment to you to $10,000. And then whatever remaining equity you have in the deal, I would pay you out maybe next year or 24 months later, or maybe even a monthly payment along the way. Does that make sense?
Right, right. So in considering that way, if it's not, and mind you, my mind is always thinking a cash deal where it's cash and done. So this buyer that's coming to look at it this weekend, if again, we are happy, I'd say happy, it's okay for...
Let's say they buy, I'll walk you through this.
I don't want to lose money. I don't want to be negative.
I'll walk you through this just real quick. So if they buy it for 245, commissions, closing costs, miscellaneous, and then plus the, when you guys bought it for 210, you went in there and you made a couple of, like if you actually ran a P&L on this property and you saw the payments you made while you were cleaning it up and you saw the utilities you were paying while you were cleaning it up, you guys paid well over $210,000. $210,000 was your purchase price.
We had one, we only paid utilities for 1 month because mind you, the like
it and took a, us
like
and a payment, weeks. Right?
Did we make a payment? No, we never made a payment because
You had a tenant go in there like right away?
Like immediately. It took us three weeks.
You bought it for 210, you put some money into it. So you're probably 11, like into it 215, I'd say somewhere in there, right?
Well, we put Is that about accurate? It was about 11,000 that we put.
Okay, so you're into it after everything, you're probably into it 225.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so that's really your break-even number is 225. So if somebody comes along and buys it for 245, you're losing money.
Right, after everything, after all the, you know, fees and closing costs. That's what I just don't want to lose. And that's why I said 275, because my mind is like at 245, we probably would be losing money.
Well, at 245 on a cash transaction, that where that $25,000 gets eaten up is other people with a creative solution with me. I don't pay any commissions to anybody. My number to you is the number you get. So here's where it's a little bit different, right? This is why creative destroys cash transactions is because you guys are sitting there paying people 25 grand in commissions on a property that you just bought. And it's like, what are we doing here? Everybody else is making money, but you.
Exactly. Like, how do you make money? I don't.
Right. So in this situation, let's say that you sell the property to them for $245.
Okay.
Right. And you pay your commissions and all that kind of stuff. You probably would walk away maybe making a positive balance of like $1,000 for all that work.
Yeah.
Okay. With a creative solution, let's say you sold it to me for 255. I really don't care what the number is, honestly, right, at the end of the day. If you sell it to me for 255, the difference between your 225, which you're into it for, right, and the 255 is you would actually end up making $30,000 selling the property to me. The challenge with that is that you're not receiving that $30,000 all up front. Okay. Right. What you're going to do is you're going to receive usually, we give a $10,000 down payment. And then I take over the house and then I make that remaining balance of the $20,000 that we have for the money you're making. I make payments towards that as well.
Okay.
So you make
payments towards the house and then payments towards the 20,000.
There you go. I could structure this 100 different ways. Like sometimes with sellers, I go, when do you need that 20 grand? They go, dude, the fact that I'm making $1,000 with the other people and I'm making 10 grand with you right now, I'm already happy.
Right.
And so sometimes that seller says, hey, this $20,000, I don't care if you pay this to me in 5 years when you refinance the house and get it out of my name. Some sellers say, I want $300 a month for the next whatever amount of time. And I make a $300 monthly payment to them on that 20 grand.
Right.
This 20 grand is like up in the air, whatever you guys feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge too is that I see is this, like you guys have an existing mortgage in your name What happens is your buyer with this other person, they're going to wipe this mortgage out, which seems like a great idea, right? And people in their mind think, well, then I'm done with the house. Well, yeah, but guess what else you're done with is you're done getting credits on your credit for that existing performing mortgage.
Right.
What happens with me is that with you and I keep making payments on that, and that continues to improve your credit over, you know, the next couple of years so that it's easier and easier and easier for you guys to go buy more and more properties, but closer to home and better, you know, where you guys ultimately want to be.
Right. Exactly.
So a creative transaction destroys a cash transaction in that situation. You make way more money and you get way better benefits long-term than you do on a cash transaction.
Right.
I mean, so that's why I look at 275. I'm like, 275 is crazy. Like, because I'm not taking commissions out. Nobody's getting paid on that transaction other than you.
Right. And so I say that's what I said, like 275 is based on the normal transaction situation.
Yeah. At 255 on a creative transaction versus 245 on a cash transaction, it seems like only a $10,000 difference. But because I'm not paying commissions and all that kind of stuff to an agent, it's actually $20,000 higher.
Right. Exactly.
So essentially it is 255 on a creative transaction essentially is 275 on a cash transaction.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. Like I said, it's not even, you know, especially to continue having, like you said, the big thing for us, especially one of the big reasons why we got this, you know, again, you're like, pull the trigger. Once we get our first investment property, that's great. Makes everything else easier. Just get that fear out of the way. But to continue having that mortgage paid down, I mean, that's nice. That's ideal.
The challenge with that property is it's not a great Airbnb location, right? It's not like a vacation destination.
It actually really is. A lot of people in that. So are you familiar with
why don't you guys turn into an Airbnb then? What would you sell it to me for?
So I don't know what we'd make after, because again, we still have a mortgage that we're paying. Mm-hmm. And after paying, you know, someone did in the turnover, I just haven't done the numbers of what that would cost us to do so.
Yeah, I would run your numbers. If that's a desire of yours, then I would go that direction. I wouldn't sell it at all. Like, why would you sell it in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, I think, have we talked about that for Airbnb?
We thought about it for a second, but you and I both talked a little bit more about how to just look at the sale.
Yeah. I think we kind of just breezed over like, well, let's just, you know, if we're trying to get away from doing this thing long distance, then
yeah,
that's the thing. I think that was the immediate, like, well, no, like the whole point is like, we're trying to get away from the whole long distance thing. Now, mind you.
And the thing too is like mortgage pay down is great. Like that phantom growth is really great, but you really don't get much phantom growth until after year 10, right? Because the majority of the first 10 years are all interest. Not all interest, but like 90% of your payment that goes to the bank for the first 10 years is interest. And so you're really not paying it down much. So are you willing to go through that length of time? For me, I look at like Airbnb towns. We have about 42 Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. The ones that perform well are ones that are like vacation destinations. The ones that don't are like, I make just as much on them as I do as a traditional rental, but I'm constantly managing them and cleaning the house 18 times a month and dealing with stupid, snooty people complaining about a toaster that hadn't been, whatever, right?
Like, yeah.
So I look at those ones that are not vacation destinations and I'm like, I don't want to waste my time.
Right. I mean, in full transparency, had this tenant, you know, left in August, oh my gosh, it would have been gold. Cause you have SEC Nation football. I mean, I think it's $600 a night for a house that size.
Right.
It's about $600 a night is what these are going for during football season.
But that's another good point too. Like if you guys are looking into Airbnb, we used to think that way 2 years ago where we'd be like, let's go find places that are the hot spots. Like here in Phoenix, our Airbnbs, we thought they did well because of the Phoenix Open. And sometimes we have the Super Bowl here and we have Barrett Jackson. And it's this big destination for these big events because our weather is amazing. And I thought that was going to spike our profitability. But the reality is Phoenix in general is just a vacation hotspot year round. And so we succeed here. And when I go and buy houses, like I have one in Atlanta where I have it right next to the stadium and I have it right next to a bunch of stuff. But Atlanta, my Atlanta properties die 5 months a year. And I'm sitting there like not even breaking even, but hemorrhaging, you know, a couple hundred dollars every month for 5 months straight. And I'm relying my entire business on 6 months of activity For right. me, if it's my first Airbnb, I would not look at that as an Airbnb. I would want to go to an area that I know year round. Like Lake Tahoe is one of those places where people go in the summer and they go in the winter, right? Exactly. They're there skiing in the winter and they're at the lake in the summertime. It's a year round destination. California, a lot of places in California, same thing, year round destination.
Right, right. And yeah, that's why we're like, you know, Lake Arrowhead or Big Bear and
right.
it's year round. So
right, right.
Yeah, in College Station, it is one of, I mean, there's always something going on, but the hot season is usually, you know, football season,
which for me is not a good Airbnb, but right. I'm not the biggest Airbnb guy. Like I know we have a bunch, but there's people have hundreds of Airbnbs, but those are the people I've paid to learn from. And they're like, nope, not going to do it there. Not going to do it there. Destination or location, location, location is everything with Airbnb.
Right.
And not 3 months out of the year, not 6 months out of the year. How do I find a spot that I invest in? And by the way, like, you guys don't ever have to get another loan as long as you live if you actually use creative finance. Like buying Sub 2 or seller finance, like we bought 16 properties last month, all in seller finance and Subject 2 that I'm like, you don't have to get a loan. You guys have opportunity all up and down California. If you tied in with like my students in Sub 2 and you said, hey guys, we're looking for a property in these areas, buy a property from one of my students on Sub 2 or seller finance. You don't have to go and buy, you know, pay another lender and pay another realtor and pay all these people to do stuff. You just get a seller to give you their house Subject 2 or you give there, get a house on seller finance.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I wish 6 months ago we knew about all of this. Like it's like a whole,
it's another... a number one thing what people say when they start talking to me, they're like, I wish I knew you 5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
it sounds like you guys are still like not even close to making a decision on that property. It sounds like you're kind of in the gray area. You're not
for the College Station property. Uh-huh. I think we are, put it this way. If this seller say today, went and looked at it and said, okay, I'll take it for $245. I think he and I would have like a maybe 30-minute, hour-long discussion, and it would probably make a decision like, okay, yes, let's do it, because it wipes our hands clean. And I feel like, in my opinion, I don't know, it feels like it's a clean slate for us to do what we can do now, what we want to do now. Having this property, it's just one property in Texas that was our, you know, trigger pulling property. Is like, okay, now it kind of, again, got the fear out. I don't think I would buy a single family just for the sake of renting it out. I would more, you know, knowing what I know now, I'll probably do duplex or, you know, something along those. And we're in a different position now than we were then. And then having, you know, tenant turnover, and it's just, like I said, it hasn't been a headache. It's just, I don't know if it's worth the...
It doesn't feel like there's something that needs to move just yet. I think that's the big thing. I think the action steps that Brittany likes to take, she likes things to have purpose in having. And if it does not do something that she wants to see done, that's why she has this much stress about it. Because for me, I'm a very patient guy. I do things, but a lot of times slower than what she does. She's just very active. So she wants to see this transact and make what she sees happening on the other side of what she does.
Yeah, makes sense. And that's a good dynamic duo between the two of you. One that's patient and one that's more aggressive, I guess. My feeling in the questions and the way that you're reacting my questions is that you're not quite ready to let go of the property yet, which is perfectly fine. But if that's the situation, why sell it at all?
I'm ready to let go of it if we aren't going negative. Like, that's how I feel. Because I'm kind of in this thing now where it's like, it's...
Here's a question for you. If you sold it Subject 2, what is the mental thing there that you feel like you're not done with the property, that you feel like you haven't washed your hands of it?
If I sold it Subject 2, what is the mental thing?
Yeah, because you're like, well, I just kind of want to be done with it and wash my hands of it. That's why you're thinking a cash transaction versus a Subject 2. What's the
A Sub 2 would allow me to wash my hands of it as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you got some homework to do on it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, yeah, I'll do some homework on it. Again, it's not something that, it doesn't cause us issues. It's just, for me, it's like, what value is it bringing right now? Like,
right. The velocity, right? Especially when you're like very, very beginning, where if you get a deal at the end of the day, like if you're making $500 a month in cash flow, that's not net, right? Because at the end of the year, you have a carpet cleaning, you have an AC that goes out, you have a this that goes out, right? So
yeah.
We look at all of our rentals as 15% of our rental has to go back into what we call a war chest.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is, what you guys rent that to him for $1,800.
Right.
So that means essentially $300 a month, roughly, needs to be put to the side for future issues, which is about $3,500 a year for like, oh, I got to paint the exterior. We got to do this. Or we got to do that on average. Some years you won't do anything and other years you'll spend 10 grand.
Right.
So is that $500 a month in gross cash flow really giving you the velocity that you need in the very beginning stages of your business.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm like, is it?
Yeah, it's not.
Is it worth it? So
no, I mean, our average Airbnb brings us in a net of $3,500 a month.
Exactly.
So on one Airbnb, I make the same amount net as one of these houses would. You would need 10 of these houses to make on one of these other Airbnbs.
Exactly. And that's where my mind is right. I'm like, this isn't giving the word velocity. It's not giving us the velocity of what we need and for what our goals are. I remember when we first bought this house at Cal, I was like, I would need 24 of these homes, probably more, to replace like one of our incomes with a cash flow of like 800, you know, to 1,000, you know, that was like,
yeah.
How soon can we get 24 doors?
Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day and I told them the analogy. I said, imagine you and I are both starting at the bottom of a mountain and we have to climb to the top of the mountain, right? To be ultimately successful. And I choose to drink the water from the stream as I'm going up the mountain, where I don't have to have a bottle of water. I don't have to carry around a camelback. I don't have to have a whatever. I can just walk up the mountain and as I need water, I dip into the stream. But you have to carry around a barrel of water and you're not allowed to touch the stream, but at least you have water. And so your job is to climb up that mountain, trying to be successful, climbing up with a big old heavy barrel of water. And that's essentially what the weight of a bad cash flowing property does for you, is that it just weighs on you. It does not help you. Whereas for me, I have all this cash flow coming to me, like tremendously, that I can go up that hill faster with no weight on me, because now next month I got $100,000 in cash flow that came to me. I can go buy another house. I can go buy another house. I can go buy another house. That house for you basically pays for one night out on the town with you and your husband per month.
Right.
Maybe not even that.
We're in LA.
No, right, that's like, yeah, LA, yeah.
Maybe at Del Taco or something, right? So it's a good game to play, but that's more of like, I'm going to hold this property until I'm 70 and that's when that pays out, right? Really what you need is you need multifamily or you need cash flowing Airbnbs that are bringing in a net of $3,500 a month. Right. That changes the game. You get two of those, you're at $7,000 a month. Man, you can now compound that and that starts getting crazy what that does for you. So
that's exactly it. Like, it's like either a small multifamily, Airbnb, or flipping. That's what gets us what we want to do. This is just kind of, even if we held onto it, it's like, okay, we still got that property. It's there.
It's basically, it's just like, it's like a stapler in the drawer in your kitchen. It's like, it's there just in case I need it, but it really isn't doing much for me.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You guys have homework to do on it. The numbers I gave you as an example, what I would do is I would look at that number from that agent, right? And I would say, okay, what am I going to walk away with? I'm technically into this property, $225,000.
Right.
So unless I sell this thing for $275,000 cash, pay commissions, all that kind of stuff, walk away with $20,000 to $30,000. For me, that's not really worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be worth it, but to walk away and break even,
right?
You just wasted half the year.
Yeah. Exactly.
With somebody like me, sell it to me sub two, I'll give you $10,000 up front and then we'll work out an arrangement for the other $20,000 and you guys will end up walking away with $30,000 from the property. Plus it continues to impact your credit in a beneficial way. And if that's not, if you want all $30,000 up front, probably not a buyer for you. But if you're like, hey, can you give me $15,000 up front? And can you do this, that, and the other? Come to me. Let me know what you want. Let's work something out.
Okay. All right.